Hello and welcome to the Times Aerospace Weekly News Podcast for the industry in the Middle East and Africa. I'm Alan Peaford. Well, things are changing. The leadership of IATA, for one, as Alexander de Juniac announces he is to step down in spring next year and will be succeeded by a man who didn't just kiss the Blarney Stone, he positively snogged it. It's the former Aer Lingus, British Airways and IAG chief, Willie Walsh, and we're going to hear from both of them in the news bulletin. And I've been tuned in to the Global Air Traffic Management event this week, one of three virtual conferences from Dubai Airshow organisers Tarsus. And I had the chance to catch up with Riyan Tarabzoni, the chief executive of Saudi Air Navigation, so you can hear some of that later in the programme. Chuck Grieve joins us today with Gary Vickers, the CEO of Air Agility, to ponder over the challenges of planning that faces the MRO shop visits. And I'm going to be talking to the CEO of an African cargo carrier that's set to begin operations from Uganda with a fleet of BAE 146s. But first, let's hear from Marcella Nethersole at the news desk to hear all about the IATA AGM and other news from around the region.
Hello, and here is this week's aerospace news from across the Middle East and Africa. IATA has called on governments worldwide to support the development of sustainable aviation fuel as a critical step to achieving its target to cut net emissions to half 2005 levels by 2050. This target was reinforced by a resolution at this week's annual general meeting, which saw the industry association commit to exploring pathways to achieve net zero emissions. Alexander de Juniac, Director General and CEO, also used the AGM to announce his decision to step down from the role.
It has been the privilege of a lifetime to serve the global air transport industry, the business of freedom, in this capacity. Since 2016, I worked with the IATA team to meet our needs by refocusing IATA around the core competencies of advocacy, standard setting, and commercial services. I will continue to proudly lead IATA until I hand over to my successor, Willie Walsh. He will inherit an organization that has served the industry well in this crisis, that has been restructured to face the future with confidence, and that has a clear strategy to support the industry towards recovery.
So, Willie Walsh, the former CEO of British Airways and its parent company, IAG, takes over from the 1st of April next year. The Irishman praised the progress made with IATA by his predecessors, Tony Tyler and Alexander de Juniac, for their understanding of business and the way governments operate. But he had a word of warning.
My style will be different to what has gone before me. I too am a businessman, and I too understand how governments operate. But I am even more unhappy and more critical of how they get things done. Or more importantly, in many cases, how they have failed to get things done. I've spent more than 40 years in this business. Almost half of those were at the pointy end as a pilot, and the other half at the blunt end as a CEO. I know what it takes to succeed. In those 40 years, I have seen firsthand the numerous challenges and significant crises that we have faced and that we have overcome. This year has been the most challenging ever. But let us not forget that the coronavirus did not stop us flying. We have continued to provide vital services, and in many cases, we were the key link to get critical supplies of safety equipment to health services. The virus did not stop our customers boarding our aircraft because we have demonstrated our ability to adapt and to ensure the safety of our customers and of our people. And we know they want to fly with us, but they have been denied the freedom that we provide, not by a virus, but by a disjointed political response and by the restrictions that have been put in place by certain governments who have failed to adapt and to adopt the sensible measures that would have allowed an almost normal air service to continue.
I think we have some exciting times ahead. In other news, Algeria has reportedly signed a contract to purchase 14 Russian Su-57 fighters, becoming the first customer of the fifth generation stealth jets outside Russia. Russia's Sputnik News reports that Algeria's government bought the fighters from Moscow for nearly $2 billion. Deliveries should start in 2025. It was reported this week that the government of Saudi Arabia has provided its flag carrier, Saudia, with some $7 billion in direct payments and other financial support in 2019 and 2020. Etihad Airways cabin crew will be speeding through Abu Dhabi Airport, thanks to a new deal with SITA, to trial facial biometrics in order to check in cabin crew at the airline's crew briefing centre. The trial will use facial recognition technology to identify and authenticate crew members, allowing them to complete check-in and mandatory pre-flight safety and security questions digitally via their own mobile devices. Turkish Cargo has begun carrying COVID-19 vaccines through a new special cargo service. The vaccines manufactured in China are being taken to São Paulo in Brazil via Istanbul and are loaded inside 7 containers equipped with dedicated cooling systems. Swissport International has added Al Qassim to its growing network in the Middle East. Last week, a first flight of Pakistan International Airlines was handled successfully at Prince Naif bin Abdul Aziz International Airport in central Saudi Arabia. The Mauritian national carrier Air Mauritius is still facing an abysmal financial problem. Administrators said this week that there's a lack of economic visibility due to the new wave of restrictions on international travel imposed by a good part of Europe and other primary markets of the airline. But Africa's cargo markets are looking up. While Ethiopian has begun freight operations on trans-Pacific routes from Incheon to Atlanta via Georgia, closer to home there is news of a new operator in East Africa. Zone 4 International has received its air services license to operate a fleet of BAE 146s at its home base in Entebbe, Uganda. And finally, some fishy business, as we discover Emirates Sky Cargo has been helping catch up Norway seafood. The family business, based out of Bengaluru in Oslo, brings fresh seafood from the cold waters of Norway to fine dining restaurants and homes of customers in India. Mark Alzawara, co-founder of Catch Norway Seafood, said its first shipment of fresh salmon was transported in 2015 with Emirates from Oslo to Bengaluru via Dubai, and this week they celebrated their 5th anniversary, presumably with a prawn cocktail. I guess there's always a place for a cod news story, Alan. It's back to you in the studio.
And you wonder why I get crabby. Thanks, Ella. So the airlines had it bad, but people rarely think of the air navigation providers. According to Canso, the COVID pandemic has cost the air navigation providers more than $9 billion so far this year, and they argue that they still have to provide the services, even if it's just for a handful of airlines. As Riyan Tarabzoni, the CEO of Saudi Arabia's air navigation provider SANS, explains.
What many people don't know, that even though operation to a certain extent have been stopped and it went from 100% to almost 5% here in Saudi, we still have some evacuation, we still had some flights, basically whether it's for medical, for a different reason, or urban or cargo, and they were taking place. And we still have to provide the right, fair, I would say, safe and reliable operation to those as well.
Terabzoni agrees that this is a time for bringing airports, airlines and air navigation providers together, with a need for each to recognize the other's problems.
Most of the airlines have been disappearing right now, and it will take them years to recover. But same similar thing applies to us. And I think we said that multiple times through the different, organization committee or a different meeting as well. We're in the same boat with you. So we're telling the airlines basically that the suffering you're seeing also we're seeing as well. We might even seeing it more because some airlines basically took the decision, for example, to reduce their manpower, number of pilots, etc., or reduce, for example, their number of aircraft, for example, flying. My infrastructure will continue to be there because they have to continue managing everything. So the way we do it, basically, that we really set up a lot of good understanding between us and the airline as well. You will be surprised that last month we kicked off our annual consultation meeting with the airlines with that specific objective. We don't want to actually work in a separate, world. We want to make sure, for example, they're engaged with us. So we use that opportunity where we opened clearly to the airlines and said, in our annual consultation meeting, which basically I was expecting in that meeting, everyone will ask me, how can we reduce our fees, for example? And when we were very clear that we gave them all the right information, we went through all the right details, but we even actually mentioned the different implementation projects that we can actually support them to how to reduce that as well, because we can offer the airlines a lot in order to reduce their cost. Maybe it's not a direct cost, maybe it's very enough indirect cost as well. And I think that's the number one way of managing, I would say, our customer focus, because we're telling them, I will maintain my high, safer level operation to you. You need to understand the impact of my operation, similar to your operation. And we need to find the right project that we're going to work on together.
Well, the air navigation service is certainly part of the Saudi Vision 2030 that is looking for a trebling of the number of Saudi flights in the next decade. Throughout GATAM, there was a real support for that idea of greater collaboration in a post-COVID world. Let's hope they succeed. Now, planning has never been trickier for the aviation industry. Rapidly changing circumstances, such as those we're seeing at the moment, play havoc with the kind of scheduling that airlines and MROs are used to, forcing them to adopt duck and weave tactics that could well become another of these new normals that we hear about every day. Our MRO editor, Chuck Grieve, sends this report.
It seems strange now to think that at the start of this year, operators were queuing for MRO slots. Booking heavy checks and planning fleet utilization years in advance was not uncommon. The sense of stability in the MRO sector was palpable and growth was linear. As we all know, business dropped away as operators moved to protect their balance sheets, and what started to emerge was a sharp focus on the short term, what some are calling a new normal in maintenance planning as airlines look to ramp up. One person with a close view of this shift is Gary Vickers. He heads a company called Aerogility, which supplies planning and predictive analytics software to the aviation industry. Gary, you've said that the short-term strategies we're seeing for re-entry are here to stay. How short-term are you talking about with your predictions?
Well, like everybody else, earlier in the year, I was hoping that we were facing a short-term situation and we would soon get past it and things would go back to normal. That doesn't seem to be the case. We've faced a lot of uncertainty over the last few months, and that uncertainty continues, although there's some optimistic news at the moment. I think from an airline planning point of view and a maintenance planning point of view, certainly people, planners that I'm talking to, are having to look at their plans almost on a daily or very frequent basis as new information comes to light, and they try and figure out the options and the trade-offs on the particular planning decisions they're making and try and understand how they're going to continue in their business.
Is it a bit of a contradiction in terms to talk about short-term and strategy in the same breath?
Yes, I think in one sense it is. Clearly what you want from a strategy is a longer term outcome. And I don't think that's changed. Airlines obviously want to sell seats, they want to fly passengers. What we're having to deal with here is that over the number of years we've had the airline business model has grown successfully, they're flying more passengers, and we've had a reasonably stable business, albeit with intense competition. We're now facing a situation where there's a constant stream of new information that have to be factored into the already complex plans that airline planners are having to put together. That situation is continuing.
With that in mind, how is it possible to run a business, either an airline or an MRO, on that basis?
Well, I think it's really challenging, and obviously the aviation industry, along with a number of other sectors, are suffering very, very badly at the moment. One thing I would say from our point of view is that we are certain that airlines need better planning and predictive capabilities in order to run multiple what-if options, to understand the trade-offs in their business, because often they're facing situations at the moment where there is no right answer, there's no optimal answer. There is a number of the shades of grey, there's trade-offs that have to be made, and sometimes, unfortunately, they're just looking for the least worst option.
What are the long-term implications, do you think, for the entire aerospace supply chain on this shift of emphasis?
Well, I wish I knew. I mean, this is obviously, I think we're entering into a period of quite a lot of change. And I think everybody in the industry needs to be able to prepare for that and change and adapt for that, because I think more agility in the supply chain, better planning, more transparent planning, and being able to communicate translate the demand for airline services across the supply chain in a more agile way, I think is going to be fundamentally important.
Hmm. How is your company set up to follow through on this?
Well, I mean, we're in the business of providing what-if simulations and analytics and planning capability to any organization with a complex, high-value asset, but we are particularly focused on the airline and defense industries. And what we are working hard on is to use our AI-based models to industry models to help our customers forecast what-if scenarios, to automatically generate plans, and really understand the subtle interactions that go on in their business and choose the optimal solutions.
Are you finding that the scenarios that you set up in your AI-based software being blown out of the water by current affairs?
Well, yes. I mean, certainly we entered into this year with a good understanding of the sort of questions that a maintenance and engineering operation would face, and what the issues that they need to figure out. And clearly, the whole COVID-19 pandemic and localized lockdowns, airlines are ceasing to fly, is a completely new situation. But fortunately for us, I mean, we can put together in our software, because we operate a sophisticated model of how an airline organization operates, we can put together what-if scenarios, and we can make the assumption in our simulations that an aircraft fleet is not flying and then starts again and start seeing the impact that has on the wider organization. So we're kind of well placed to do this, but obviously it's a very a new and unusual situation.
Have you got any gut feeling, Gary, about when situation might return to normal?
Well, I mean, we've had some good news this week. The question mark I have in my mind is obviously we've been through, is it a false dawn? I mean, you hope not, and that we go back to the new, the old ways of working. But I guess we are also entering into a period of social change anyhow, where that environmental considerations, new technology in aircraft being introduced. I think the airline industry probably has to prepare for volatility and needs planning agility in response for the foreseeable future that I can see.
Thank you very much, Gary.
Thanks, Chuck. Now, one market segment that is seeing growth and opportunity is the freight business. As you heard in the news, Zone 4 International has received its clearance this week to get its fleet of 5 BAE 146s into operation from Uganda. I spoke to the founder and CEO, Kay Odom, about the choice of aircraft and his airline's move to enter the commercial market.
We started about 10 years ago in Uganda. We were more in line with the air services platforms of providing services to large scale organizations, providing aircraft in various areas of operation, South Sudan, Somalia. Over time, we began to invest more into aircraft and became aircraft owners and leasing out the aircrafts. And now we're venturing more into a commercial space, especially given what's happened while we're in the worldwide COVID-19 pandemic, to where we're going to be operating commercially very soon. We are acquiring 5 BAE 146 freighters, a combination of 300 and 200 freighters. The first freighter is now in Entebbe. It's been registered. 5 X-ray Alpha Zulu, and it is in the process of the AOC certification process. So we received our air service license yesterday, and we look forward to moving into the new future with this platform.
Now, you're based at Entebbe International Airport, aren't you? So where do you see freight as being, and commercial freight now as being an important market for Africa, and the pandemic's kind of demonstrating that?
Well, freight has always been crucial to the African markets, both on the export and import side. I think what's happening now is with the growth in Africa, especially on the commodity side with perishables, as the countries are becoming more and more advanced with processing and meeting international standard, we're going to be seeing an increase in not only international or long haul distribution, but also regional distribution. So intertrade between the East African community Central African community and the overall African community. I think we found an aircraft that's can meet our needs within the confines of what we do best, which is regional freight applications and contract applications and aircraft leasing. We're looking at opening up 7 destinations. Right now, Juba is South Sudan. We're operating into Mogadishu, Somalia. We're operating into. So we're looking at opening up, especially on the Indian Ocean coast, the Comoros Islands, as well as Malawi. We are targeting places where there is little to no competition, where there are short airfields, where you know the wide body aircraft is not that prevalent. So that's our niche market, and that's where the 146 really is king.
Now, a lot of people will have said with the 146 that we've seen it a lot around the world in passenger use, and it began to get too expensive in the sense of 4 engines. So how does that affect right. you? Is it going to be costly for you to operate, or is it a good bargain?
Well, out of all of the aircraft we looked at, I mean, we spent a year analyzing different aircraft platforms, including the ATP, the Fokker 50, the Dash 8, and even the 737. Given the environment that we operate and the places we have to operate to, the 146, while it can't do all things for all purposes, it can do the majority of it. The aircraft is heavily reliable. It's well supported. The engines are modular, so the engines can be, you know, if there's an issue, they can be inspected without having to take the engine off the wing and without having to completely overhaul it, which saves cost in the long run, and it saves ground time. Also, keep in mind, in my opinion, the market doesn't have a lot to choose from. The African market doesn't have a lot to choose from when it comes to freighters and the conditions and environment that we have to operate in. High temperatures, high elevations, unpaved strips. The BAE is probably the closest aircraft to a commercial mainstream aircraft such as the Boeing 737, but has the attributes of flying with considerable range comparable to the 737. And the ability to also fly the short sectors, the short runways, the steep takeoff and landings, the unpaved operations, narrow runway operations, hot and heavy operations. So it gives us a great tool in our portfolio to be on the contract spectrum and also in the commercial sphere.
Okay, it sounds tremendous, and I want to take this opportunity to wish you good luck. And it's great to get a nice positive story about growth in Africa's aviation scene. So good luck with that, my friend, and we look forward to talking to you in the future once the aeroplanes are operating.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. Well, Kay has some ambitious plans, and I hope to see him succeeding. But of course, it goes against a background of many concerns over African aviation at the moment. IATA's latest forecast, delivered just after the AGM, show that African airlines have received little government support during the crisis, while the relative lack of cold chain facilities may delay the distribution of vaccines, meaning Africa is expected to experience a delayed recovery in financial performance. So while passenger traffic is forecast to be down 66.3% globally in 2020, Africa's decline is predicted to be 72%. Crucially, Africa's recovery next year is also expected to be much slower, with the region forecast to see demand at 62% down on 2019 figures versus a global prediction of around 50%. So a gloomy note to end on, but I'm encouraged by those noises of new carriers like Zone 4 and expanding ones like Safe Air in Kenya. They're coming through, so to me, there remains hope. Well, that's it from us this week. I guess we're going to be seeing a lot on the sheer logistics of shipping various vaccines around the world in the next few weeks. And let's hope we'll be seeing a lot more of each other for real as a result of that. Until then, keep safe, get flying, and thanks for listening.